The Obama administration's latest plan to boost the economy?
Cut the red tape.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in for Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, August 23rd.
Coming up, we'll hear about today's White House plan to change regulations for businesses.
Also, what impact is the upheaval in Libya having on the global economy?
And call it the Biden bump. The vice president does a little noodle diplomacy in Beijing, Stacey, and the noodle shop is the one getting the best part of the deal.
All right. Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The White House will unveil plans today to cut hundreds of federal regulations for businesses. According to an op-ed by an Obama administration official in this morning's Wall Street Journal, the White House will eliminate rules to save companies billions of dollars over the next 5 years. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us now from Washington with more. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Jeremy.
So, Nancy, give us some details here. What kind of regulations are we talking about?
Jeremy, they cover everything from rail safety to gas tanks. Now, some of these regulations are obviously redundant and unnecessary. There's a rule that gas stations have to install valves on pumps to keep gas vapors from escaping when you're pumping gas, even though there's already technology on cars that does exactly the same thing. The Transportation Department will now only apply certain railroad safety rules where they're actually needed. The White House says that'll save up to $340 million. The Department of Homeland Security is going to expedite clearance of low-risk travelers through security at airports. It says a pilot program over the past year has already saved passengers time, which DHS values at more than $2 million. And the Environmental Protection Agency will allow more paperwork to be filed electronically. And the White House says that'll save up to $126 million a year.
And Nancy, I assume that none of these new regulatory changes involve any of the new regulations that came as part of Wall Street reform or healthcare reform.
That's right, Jeremy. In fact, the National Association of Manufacturers says regulations from those new laws are actually more of a threat to job creation and competitiveness.
All right. Well, let's get some reaction now from Professor Charles Elson, who heads up the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware. Professor Elson, do you think that these new regulatory changes being announced today will help create jobs?
Way too little, way too late, given the regulatory posture of this administration, a bit disingenuous and, I think, grasping at straws.
But we're still talking about hundreds of regulatory cuts, right?
Well, you know, the general theme of this administration has been heavy, heavy regulation in all kinds of areas. And it's basically like having someone hit you on the head with a lead pipe and then offering to shake your hand. It doesn't get you very far.
Well, let me ask you, though. I mean, there's been obviously a lot of criticism about overregulation from the Obama administration and that's hampering the recovery. But isn't it just a lack of demand, a big recession? Isn't that what's the problem here?
It's part of it, but I think it's also uncertainty about how these new regulations will play out ultimately in corporate profitability, whether it's Dodd-Frank or anything else this group has done. There's a real lack of confidence throughout the economy as to where we're going in the future and a lack of understanding what this administration really intends to do or not do. And I think that uncertainty has been part of the problem with capital formation that we've seen in this recession.
Charles Elson, head of the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hurricane Irene continues to gather steam as it heads toward Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina. It's expected to become a dangerous Category 3 storm today.
And meanwhile, Stacey, just to the west in Alabama, residents are still picking up the pieces after the deadly tornadoes that struck in April. And they've had an interesting effect on radio stations.
Oh, really?
Executives in the state's radio business say the storms cost them millions of dollars in advertising revenue. From WBHM in Birmingham, Tanya Ott has the story.
Most days, Birmingham's 95.7 Jams sounds like this. But in the days after the tornado, it was wall-to-wall news.
Back in studio with our coverage as we ourselves had to get to our places of safety.
Immediately after the storm, I called to say I have grave reservations.
That's David DeBose, head of Cox Media Group in Birmingham. The company he called was Arbitron. It's like the Nielsens of radio. Arbitron mails out diaries for people to record what stations they listen to.
When the tornado hit, you had some diaries that were already in the field. Imagine, are you going to fill out your diary, or are you going to worry about dealing with the debris that's in your yard or hole in your roof?
Sure enough, Jams dropped from its long-held number one spot in the market to number five. DeBose demands Arbitron dump the ratings for the period when the tornado hit, but Arbitron's Beth Webb says no way.
A few days' disruption isn't going to disrupt the entire service if things get back to normal.
And she says things did get back to normal. The company collected enough diaries. Webb says a blip for one station doesn't warrant canceling the ratings for the entire Birmingham area. Industry execs say this rumble over ratings points to a larger problem. Arbitron is a monopoly. If it wants to dig its feet in on any issue, there's not much radio stations can do about it.
It's not due to some sort of nefarious plot.
Peter Dominowski is with Market Trends Research. He says other companies have tried competing against Arbitron, but didn't last because the business is highly specialized and expensive. Observers note, until another company gets in the radio ratings business, there are bound to be more disputes. In Birmingham, I'm Tanya Ott for Marketplace.
News this morning that the Swiss bank UBS is laying off about 3,500 workers, about half of them in the investment banking division. This follows last week's news, of course, from Bank of America. It's planning to cut 3,500 jobs.
Meanwhile, the head of Standard & Poor's is stepping down. Devin Sharma will leave the ratings agency next month. Questions have been heating up about S&P's downgrade of U.S. debt, though the agency says that's not why he's leaving.
More numbers anytime at marketplace.org.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now let's get to the Marketplace global perspective. Yesterday, it seemed victory was at hand for Libyan rebels. Today, the situation looks a lot hazier. One of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's sons has reappeared, and rebels have retreated from parts of Tripoli. Robert Powell joins me now to talk about what this will mean for Libya's economy. He specializes in the Middle East and North Africa for the Economist Intelligence Unit. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Robert, yesterday it seemed like the Gaddafi regime was going to topple. Now it seems like there's a little bit more uncertainty. What does that mean for Libya's government and for Libya's economy?
Yeah, there's a considerable level of doubt. We are in the midst of a fog of war. And, of course, in terms of investment, in terms of businessmen, in terms of that country's economy, it really cannot move forward until we have some certainty on the way ahead.
Oil is obviously one of the big topics. Libya is very oil rich. In your opinion, is that going to make it easier for Libya to move forward or potentially more difficult?
It should make it a lot easier. It's also, if you keep in mind, they have about $100 billion plus of relatively easy to access foreign assets as well, which they can draw down while they get the oil sector back on its feet. But it does at least give them an easy source of foreign exchange. It will bring in considerable sums into the fiscal coffers, which means the government can spend money to rebuild the country and pay the civil service.
Are there any countries with toppled dictators that provide any lessons for Libya right now?
I guess a lot of eyes are on Iraq. It was seen as the next frontier, and it was making many oil executives salivate. Libya's not quite to that extent, but if you look, at least in terms of timelines of how long it took for production to recover to its earlier levels, Iraq could potentially reveal some lessons. So if you look in the Iraqi case, the regime fell in 2003. It was not until 2008 until Iraqi oil production returned to its previous levels. And in the case of Libya, it will probably take a few years before oil is back up again to its pre-war levels.
Robert Powell is senior economist with the Economist Intelligence Unit. Robert, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So what does the situation in Libya mean for global oil prices? Let's bring in Julie Neiman for that. She's an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, and she's with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning.
So is the situation in Libya having any impact at all on oil prices?
Well, basically, Libya had about 1.8 million barrels a day coming out of it. Most of it went to Italy. Europe had to shift around supplies to make up for that kind of loss. if Gaddafi falls, it'll be months before that oil goes back online again. And that's assuming he doesn't do a scorched earth policy like Saddam Hussein did to Kuwait in 1991. Hmm. The oil companies will move back in slowly. Optimistically, it's going to be 6 months before they actually return online. Now, in Gulf War II, Iraq still is nowhere close to production it had before the war. So, you know, we really don't know how fast this will be coming back on.
So it sounds like you're saying that people are not really focusing on Libya in terms of an effect on oil prices globally right now.
And it won't be that significant because weighing on the price of oil is really deteriorating conditions of the economies worldwide. Demand's likely to decline, and that's going to put further downward pressure on oil prices. The world just isn't strong enough to support $100 a barrel. But there's really no relief in sight for consumers near term.
How long does it take for whatever happens in Libya and however that impacts the price of oil to reach us at the gas pump?
Well, it's about 60 days from the wellhead actually to your gasoline pump. Refiners are working at full capacity right now. The demand this summer has been fairly steady, even with the big swings in prices. But now we're going to be seeing a shift away from gasoline to heating oil, and that's not going to help gasoline out at all. It's going to be very high this winter to get the heating oil. So even with the economy deteriorating, prices for gasoline and heating oil still aren't cheap, and they're not going to get cheap as we want it to be just because we have tight market volatility right now.
Julie Neiman, analyst with Smith-Moore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
Japan is getting a new prime minister. Naoto Kan is resigning after only about a year in power.
The changeover is expected to happen next week and could have significant consequences for the global economy. The BBC's Roland Burke is with us now from Tokyo with the latest. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there are reports this morning saying that this is about the Fukushima disaster and the response to that, but this is the seventh prime minister Japan has had in the last 5 years. It seems like there must be something economic here.
Well, certainly the economy is a major factor. The fact is that we've had so many prime ministers here because the parliament is divided. The opposition control the upper house, the government controls the lower house, and that means none of those prime ministers has really been able to get things done to tackle the economy. And in addition to that, it's been difficult for Mr. Kan to tackle the problems at the Fukushima nuclear plant, to kickstart the reconstruction after the huge earthquake and tsunami in March. It's cost him his popularity, and now it's costing him his job.
All right, well, what about the next prime minister? Is this going to have an impact on the rest of the world? Japan is still obviously one of the biggest economies in the world.
I think it depends on who it's going to be. What Japan needs to do, many people say, is tackle its enormous public deficit and the huge public debt, which is the biggest in the industrialized world. But a new prime minister, if he can reach out to the opposition, could start to tackle these problems in Japan's economy. And given that this is the third biggest economy in the world, that would be good for other countries too.
The BBC's Roland Burke joining us from Tokyo. Thanks, Roland.
Thank you.
So, Jeremy, Kellogg is complaining that a Mayan cultural heritage group stole its logo.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. The Maya Archaeology Initiative uses a toucan as part of its trademark, and Kellogg says...
Toucan Sam.
Exactly. It's too reminiscent of the Fruit Loops front man. And, you know, I'm thinking that this could set a precedent and Little Caesars could finally, you know, launch that lawsuit against ancient Rome because they've been getting away with murder for a long time. China-based Lenovo debuts its tablet computer today. Lenovo hopes its ThinkPad tablet will be the new Apple iPad. But it's a tough world for tablets. Last week, HP discontinued its touchpad after less than 2 months on the market. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
When you hear the phrase tablet computer, odds are you'll think of the iPad. Apple introduced the device last year, and since then, it's sold more than 25 million. Jason Noland is with Robert W. Baird & Company.
Really tough for other companies, even companies the size of HP, to break into that effectively.
Nolan says that's because the Apple tablet came first.
A great product attracts users, which attracts developers, which attracts more users, and it's kind of a winner-take-all market.
Other companies entered the race late, and they're trying to catch up. There are tablets that run on the Android operating system, and there's the BlackBerry Playbook. Carl Howe is a tech analyst with the Yankee Group. He says companies should stop trying to copy Apple.
I think one of the things that some of the other companies have to do is create new experiences that are different than the iPad.
It appeals to consumers who want to watch movies and listen to music and read e-books. Starting today, Lenovo is marketing its ThinkPad tablet to business users. There's another thing companies may want to keep in mind.
Price matters.
That's Larry Dignan, the editor of the tech site ZDNet. iPads start at almost $500. If a competitor can make a device that's less expensive, he says, that'll have broad appeal. Last weekend, HP tried to get rid of those touchpad tablets it discontinued. They were on sale for just $99. Dignan says they flew off store shelves, and HP's site couldn't keep up with the traffic. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally, Stacey, you know the Michelle Obama phenomenon, which is that basically every time she goes out and wears a new dress or a new outfit, the stores sell out of them immediately,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So now we've got the Joe Biden sales bump. The vice president, as we've been reporting, was in Beijing last week, and he stopped into a family-owned noodle shop for lunch. And ever since then, it takes an hour to get into the place. The diners have been lining up just to get a table at this restaurant.
Oh, my God.
And they're all asking for the Biden special, which includes steamed meat buns and noodles topped with soybean paste. Although I think that the actual special at this restaurant was something like intestine and stomach soup or something like that. So maybe
wow.
It's better that they're
getting
the Biden
special. I have to say.
That's right.
The Biden bump. I love it.
The Biden bump. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, in for Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.